And therefore, that's if you can do that, then that's you established your proof. Because as you say,
let me ask you first. Why are you concerned about that question?
Well, the whole basis of Judaism
yeah.
is based on the existence of God, right? And therefore, is to me, it's the fundamental.
Let me explain what I mean. What I'm concerned. There's a great deal of mental gymnastics going around. Where, there is a great deal of curiosity to play around, and especially today, where there's a lot of imagination added to thinking. People can have theories just in order to have theories. Now, but if I want to know, if I'm going to a doctor and I have some pain and I want to find out, it's not just curiosity. It's something that I'm concerned about. Now, I want to know, this was exactly my question. Is this a theoretical curiosity you want to know, to discuss about it, or is it something which is concerning your life?
It's not an intellectual curiosity at all. I mean, it's fundamental to life, absolutely fundamental. I mean, for me, and I assume most of the people that come to yeshiva, they're based on the decision they make, right? Based on the fact they will decide how they're going to live their lives. Now, if you decide that it's true and that God gave the Torah, then the implications of that are enormous, and it could affect dramatically the way you live your life. And on the other hand, if you decide it's not true, then you might not have that much to do with Judaism, and you might not want to spend your time in yeshiva. So, you know, I think there's more to it than intellectual curiosity.
Are you ready, if it's true, are you ready to spend in yeshiva and to change?
Well, I'm of the opinion that it is true, and that's why I'm here, because to me it was true. But, you know, people stand up frequently and say, in their opinion, it can't be proven, and anyone that thinks it can is out of order. Now, I completely disagree with that statement.
Uh-huh.
And I find that I don't know why they hold that view.
Again, I'll start with what I started before. There is a method of proving things by exposing the opposite as an absurdity. You're familiar with this?
I am. I don't think it would work in this case.
Pardon?
I don't think it would work in this case.
It will not work in that case.
Geometry, you're talking about a case where you have a choice of one or the other. And here we're talking where you've got a choice of many cases.
I don't have many cases.
No?
If I am just, let me tell you a little story. This week happened. A grandfather tells me the nachas of a grandfather's nachas. He's going to the sea. And he takes his grandchildren with him. And that little girl is 5.5 years old. She looks at the sea and she says, Hashem, thank you for the sea and for everything. It's a beautiful story. I was not surprised. The grandfather was surprised. I was not surprised. I know that the kindergartens can produce this. A good kindergarten can produce it. I I was just thinking today, in the story of Bereishis, the Ramban, have you learned Genesis? Again? The Ramban says, Rashi is asking, why did the Torah start from the story of Bereishis? Why didn't it start from Achedus Hazelachem, which is the first commandment which was given? It's a book of commandments. Why did it start with stories before? So the Ramban is wondering, what's the meaning? You are telling us so many things in Bereishis. And Rashi says we could have. So the Ramban explains. He says, after learning the whole Bereishis, you still don't know what's going on. And you have to believe. So it doesn't make any difference if you know what was created the first day, what was created the second day. The Torah could have given you a statement, Hashem has created this world. And then go on and give you commandments. But today I just was the marvel of seed. You know that this is an unlimited concept in a limited world. You know that? Huh? Because if you take a potato is endless. And the human race is endless. And this is the most amazing thing which we can observe, is that the entire concept of seed. We pass by, we don't notice it, but it's amazing how the Torah is stressing on it. Statement after statement in the 6 days of creation, it's always, and everything that's mentioned, created, it's mentioned, it was given the power of seed. One thing I know, and that no laboratory and no scientific institution can explain it to me. Is that right? I'm not going too far. I am taking part of my finger, the engineering in it. The engineering of nerves, blood vessels, muscles, bones. The combination of each and every part cooperates with each other. And all this is born almost out of nothing, develops. There must be an engineer. The accident of this world, and that it is just an accident, is such an absurdity. That's impossible for a person to start thinking. By not thinking, it's different, and I'll tell you. There is a story in Medrash. A pagan comes to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and says, "You Jews are superstitious." Says, "What's a superstition?" He mentions to him the story with the red heifer, which is a law. That this is the this is the concept of tumor. And this is a concept of which we know nothing what it is. And as a matter of fact, it concerns little in our daily practice today. Why? Because tumor, only kedusha, only holiness, is sensitive to tumor. And since, so therefore, when there was the Beis HaMikdash, and they had, and even Truma was, even today, Truma Chala has a quality of holiness, and we are considered Tmeim. You know this? Because of the story with Red Haifa. There are different kinds of tumor that you can attract, but one kind is you attract in being in contact with the dead body. And this, you cannot get rid of it unless you have some sprinkling of the ashes of the red hive. And since this doesn't exist today, we are all Tmeyamishim, we're all considered Tmeyamishim. But it doesn't hurt us, because there is no Beis HaMikdash. As a matter of fact, if somebody, the question of going to the Temple Mount is a question, because over there there are areas where Tommy cannot go in. And it seems those are the areas which the Arabs have now. But that entire concept is a concept of, it has to be a very white cloth that you should recognize that kind of a spot. But there is something. We don't know what it is. I can understand when you talk about dead body, I can understand. Everything. Life and physical life is a process of development of cells, right? Decay is also a development of cells. Huh? But it's a wrong development. I would say that it's the same, the family, the decay of dead decay is almost the same family as cancer. It's a non-life development of cells. Now, the same as life is holy, death is just the opposite. Now, what is holy, I don't know. But it's a term that I am told about it, and I handle it not knowing what it is. But in any case, here's the story. That man comes to Rabbi Yochanan and says, "You are superstitious." He says, "Why?" He says, "A man touches a dead body, you say you defile yourself. And then you take," he says, "a red heifer, you burn it to ashes, mix the ashes in a little water, sprinkle on him, and you say, you're purified." The whole thing is superstition. So Rabbi Yochanan Mezakeh says to that man, they had, in their time, the people believed in a certain illness that it was an evil spirit. They called it Ruach Tzotzis. He says, "Have you ever seen a case of that evil spirit?" He says, "Yes." He says, "What are you doing?" He says, "Simple." He says, "We bring grass, we put the grass on fire, we let the man inhale the smoke, and the spirit runs away." So Rabbi Yechon says to him, the same thing he says. From the dead body, he says there is an evil spirit, and that spirit, just when it smells that ashes of the red heifer, runs away. And the man is satisfied. After the man left, the disciples of Rabbi Yechon say, Rabbi, what did you do to him? You pushed him away with the straw. You know what's the meaning, pushing away with the straw? A man wants to come close to me, and I keep a pipe, an iron pipe, metal pipe. He can't come close. He can't bend the pipe. If instead of a pipe, I keep a straw, and the man thinks it's a pipe, he doesn't come close. If he would try, it would bend. If I give somebody an answer, with the answer, doesn't make sense, which doesn't hold out. It's like pushing him away with a straw. You didn't give him an answer. What is the real answer? Do you hear that? So Rabbi Yechonah says, the dead body doesn't defile you. The red heifer doesn't purify you. It's a divine decree, and we follow it. And we cannot question it, it says. Ein lecha reshus, gzeiro gzarti, hukocha kakti, ein lecha reshus. Now I want to know what was wrong with the first answer. They said that it was a straw. Why did they call it a straw, that first answer? What do you think? Again, what was the answer? He said it's exactly the same treatment as you treat the evil spirit. What's wrong?
Problem is the way that we treat the evil spirit is superstition.
Because the evil spirit itself is a piece of superstition.
So they gave an answer, you're just like you, we're superstitious like you are.
Now the question is, that man, why was he satisfied with the answer? There is no answer. Why was he satisfied?
He heard the same thing that was proof for him, for his superstition.
Pardon?
He heard the proof that the way he believed his superstition was proven to him about the red heifer. So he figured, well, if he believed in his superstition, then the other superstition.
So he said, the same proof. He answered him and said, you're also superstitious. I don't think that was the answer. I don't think was the answer. The man really had the impression that his question was answered.
Yeah, but the man didn't know he was superstitious. The man thought, well, the way you do, we do, so it must make sense. And he said, okay,
so why didn't
I'm not superstitious. You're like, obviously.
Yeah, good, good. But you see that the man is superstitious?
I say he is, but he doesn't think so.
Why doesn't he think so?
Because he thinks what he does makes sense. He thinks there's a basis for it.
Yeah, but how come that the tricky evil spirit he does not consider superstition and the story with the red heifer, and it's exactly the same?
Because he was taught from his parents that the way you get rid of the disease is by...
So the answer is, I'll tell you, the answer is one word. Habit. Mm-hmm. I remember when I was a child, and there was a sun eclipse. So the boys, I must have been 7 years old at that time, we didn't have sunglasses even. Years ago, how many years ago? In the city of Brisk. So, but we know, we are told that it's a danger to look straight at the... So at that time we had no electricity yet. So the lamps were kerosene lamps. So we took broken pieces of glass and we kept it over the... And then it was covered with smoke, kerosene smoke, and we had something to look at. And we were sitting, the boys were discussing, what's happening? How come it happens to the sun, something like this? I became older. I asked myself a question. Why did we start questioning sun eclipse. Why didn't we question how the sun shines? The answer is, it shines every day. We took it for granted.
Habit.
So, which means that habit is the enemy of discovery. Is the enemy of thinking. Because, and we fool ourselves. Things which we're accustomed to, we take them for granted, and we don't question anymore. If not for this, every human being would believe in a creator. It's impossible. It's just a habit. It just was a question. Is that clear?
I mean, I agree with that.
I mean, pardon?
I agree with that. Okay? So, therefore, that plus the fact that God revealed himself at Sinai. I mean, to me, if you look at nature, you see the purpose and the design, and you break the habit, and you study everything in detail, you'll come to the conclusion that it's an absurdity to say that's chance.
Fine.
And if not chance, it must be planned. So that's one way.
Step one.
You know, quite a simple way to come to the conclusion.
Huh?
So it's, to me, that's one proof. But apart from that, also the Jewish people, God revealed himself at Sinai, yes?
Yeah.
And they actually...
This you want to prove.
No, I'm just... Okay.
Yeah.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, that can be proven, right? But the question is, to me, if you take nature, and you can also show that the events at Sinai took place, which I think you can show, if you can show those things, then as you say, I mean, even without Sinai, let's just take nature. As you say, any human, any rational person, honest rational person, would be forced into the position of...
It was just still thinking. Just by thinking.
Right. So, to me, it's not right for any philosophers or rabbis to stand up and say that it cannot be proven. Because to me, it can.
It can be proven.
Yes, if you're honest and you're rational.
Fine. So, what makes you unhappy? It can be proven. And someone thinks it cannot be proven. Maybe they don't know what he's talking about. Mm-hmm. That's all. That's why I said it's not, we don't have here a question of two opinions, which one is right, which one is wrong. We have a question of facts. And we have that fact, but let's go further. Now, when it comes to practical decisions, we don't even have ways of having definite proof for our decisions. Again, let me tell you a Gemara. There is an argument in the Mishnah, Rabbi Shmuel and the Chachomim. How long does it take for an embryo to develop, to become out of seed, to become an embryo? The Chachomim say it takes 40 days. Rabbi Shmuel says, if it's a male embryo, 40 days. If it's a female embryo, it takes 80 days. And they're arguing a text in Chumash, where that text indicates that a female embryo has a double time of development. Are you there? Says the Gemara. In the argument, the Chachomim said, an experiment was made in Alexandria. Cleopatra was the queen at that time. And they had some girls who were sentenced to death. So they made experiments with them. And they found that after 40 days, the male and the female embryos were ready. Now, it's very, very close. I think modern medicine says that by about 6 weeks, you can recognize the sex. That's what they heard. So it's very close to 40 days. But here's what Rabbi Shmuel says. They gave him an argument. So he says, I am proving it from Chumash, and you bring me a proof, it says, from those idiots? I prove my case from Chumash, you bring me proof from those idiots. So the Gemara starts. Why do you call them idiots? So the Gemara says, Rabbi Shmuel says, who told you? Maybe those women who were pregnant with female embryos, maybe they were pregnant from before. So the Gemara says, now the Chachom says it's a proof. That's not a proof. So the Chachom said, before starting their experiment, they were given a medicine to clean the body. And then they made an experiment. So then the Gemara says, Rabbi Shmuel, why does he call them idiots? Rabbi Shmuel says, there are some bodies who do not react. There are exceptional bodies who do not react to that medicine. Now what do you think? He's right or wrong? Does he have a right to call them idiots? Imagine they had 10 cases. Yeah, you know, an experiment, you never make an experiment. In a laboratory, you never make one experiment. You make a number of experiments. Now they had 10 cases. All those 10 women were pregnant from before. All those 10 women were those unusual bodies who do not react. Does it make sense?
Possible, sure. Logically, logically, it doesn't.
I think the entire. That's the methods of the laboratory. This is how you prove things. Because it's unlikely. Huh, isn't it? Why does he call them idiots?
People go by logic and science. And they don't go by Hashem. Because their proof is unlikely, his proof is certain.
Huh?
They prove from probability, he proves from certainty.
So, I think, well, let me say it another way. Human calculation can err. Facts which we see are facts. We accept them as facts. And I don't go that far. Philosophers say we don't see facts. A fact is a fact. But human calculation may err. Now, that experiment was not 100% fact. Because as a fact, it could be that those women were unusual women. But it's not likely. It's 99% facts, but 1% logic. Now, what Rabbi Shmuel says is like this. I do not confront the Torah with human logic. The Torah has information which is certain. Human logic is never certain. But on the other hand, we have rules to say this is logical to accept, this is not logical to accept, but not more than this. Therefore, it says, if you oppose logic to Torah, logic compared to Torah is an idiot. That's what you said. Mm-hmm. I understand. Now, that statement, that there is no proof, no fact, was stated by Immanuel Kant. He says there is no empiric proof. On the other hand, we live, we keep on living. Means that for our behavior, we don't need 100% fact. We go by logical rules. Is that clear? Because it doesn't exist. The same as it doesn't exist, it wouldn't exist in measurements. You don't have precision measurements. Approximate. Everything is approximation. You know that. Huh?
Some facts are 100% facts, and there are irrefutable facts. Yes? Do you agree?
Wait a minute. A fact, sure there are facts, but rules are established on fact plus logic. That's what Kant said.
Yeah.
Now, we are talking about conclusions. Conclusions are always not 100% facts. Conclusions are always fact. Yeah. Just a sprinkling of logic. But without that sprinkling, it doesn't go. Then all the facts fall apart. Is that right?
Yep, you need some logic.
Yeah. So therefore, we have the human being has built in rules how to behave with his limited logic. We have built in. That's why I say we don't have exact measurements and bridges do not collapse. Therefore, when it comes to our behavior, we also have to again apply the same logical ruling as a 19. Now, we want to know, should there be rules for behavior or not? What do you say?
Yes. Should there?
Yeah. Do we need rules or we don't need rules?
You do, but it's a bit of a subjective question.
Pardon?
It's a subjective question. But it's partially subjective.
Who is subjective?
The whole question is, or the response to that question is...
No, that's an objective question. I ask, do we need rules or not?
Everyone would say you do need rules, yes?
Why?
To make society live in a civilized manner. Like chaos.
Who needs civilization?
Well, that's true, so... if you hold that view, then you would say, no, you don't need any rules. That's why I say it's...
Yeah, I'll tell you. Even today, I would find that we'll come to some areas where civilization did not penetrate yet. They have a healthier life than we have. So who needs civilization? That's an idol. Yeah. The Medrash has that story, Alexander the Great in his travels. He comes to a land in Africa, which is interesting. Africa is, in Medrash, considered as an ideal country. Very interesting. And I'll tell you, I experienced it. A twice I had an occasion to be in South Africa. People, wonderful. It's very interesting. But here's the story about Alexander the Great. Comes to Africa, comes to a remote country over there, and he is a guest, the king's guest. The king invites him to observe the experience over there. One day the king sits in court, and he's the judge, and two people are coming. You know that story, the argument? Mm-hmm. Huh? He sold him a house, and the buyer found the treasure over there, so he came to return the treasure to the seller. And the seller said, you bought the house, it's yours. And he says, no, I bought the house, I didn't buy any treasure, the treasure is yours. And they have a case, and they go to court. Mm-hmm. Come to the king, and it's a case. And then finally the king said, maybe we can solve it. If you have children, marriageable age, marry them off and give them this dowry, and it's settled. It's settled. Then Alexander speaks up. In our country, the government has youth. People, each one throws a treasure away. The government would have taken it. So, and the king says, Alexander, he says, does the sun shine in your country? He said, yes. Is rain coming down to your country? He says, yes. Do you have cattle in your country? He says, yes. Makes sense, he says. The humans don't deserve the sun, don't deserve the rain. He says, it's for the cattle that the sun is raining. That's another story. But what is interesting, the Medrash gives me Alexander coming from civilized Greece, coming to a primitive country. And here's the difference. I am not so sure how much civilization has done for us. Civilization has sold itself to us. And everybody thinks that the other things that civilization are wonderful things. So, I don't know what civilization is. Therefore, I would say if civilization says I need rules, so it says. I still don't need rules. But I want to know why I need rules. So you say that all social rules are what we call in Gemara Niske Shchenim. Every one of you have learned the first perek of Bava Basra and the second perek of Bava Basra. First perek. Huh? First perek. First perek, but in such perek you have already. Huh?
What?
You have already the concepts that there has to be a rule that people should have privacy. Yeah. Huh? Mm-hmm. So therefore, because he needs privacy, I can't build my window looking out is right. This is a considerations of neighborship. Niske Shchenim, as considerations of neighborship. And I would say that the entire, all rules, all social rules, are going into that category. I have to limit myself in order to not to step on his toes. Huh? So therefore, society needs rules. It's much more than this, much deeper than this. I'll give you an illustration. Lying. A liar. good or bad? What do you think?
It's neutral.
Huh?
Neutral. Not good or bad.
It's not good, not neither good nor bad.
Depends on the case.
A fellow is a liar. Mm-hmm.
In the sense that he never tells the truth?
Huh?
Or in the sense,
what do you think? I don't know. I guess
there are cases when lying is good.
A case of one lie is good?
Yeah.
Which lie?
If you lie to keep peace in the home?
Like a certain Lankop. Those are exceptions. Those are exceptions. But as a rule, every rule has to have exceptions.
It's a rule.
Huh? But it has to be a rule.
Mm-hmm.
There's that story. Now that's very interesting. That story, I think, when a Roman governor, if I'm not mistaken, it was with Rabbi Akiva. I don't remember. And that man says to Rabbi Akiva, he says, I am better than Moshe Rabbeinu. For me, you're better than Moshe Rabbeinu. He says, I'm better than Jew Rabbi Moshe. So what's the meaning? He says, King Solomon says it. What did King Solomon say? He says, a dog alive is better than a dead lion. So Moshe Rabbeinu is dead already so many years. And I'm alive. So I'm better. So Rabbi Akiva says, let's try out whether you're alive or not. He agrees he's a dog, but he wants to know what's alive. He says, you are a ruler here in this country. Issue a rule that for 3 days nobody should make fire in the house. We'll see whether people can observe what you say. On the third day, he comes to the governor, goes over on the roof garden of his house, and they look, and they see that there's smoke coming out. Says, you said you're a dog alive? He says, you're a dead dog. Moshe Rabbeinu, he says, our lion, until today, so one Jew didn't dare make fire on Shabbat. That's an amazing statement. Nobody would make a statement like this today. Huh? But this was going on, that situation that no Jew would transgress was going on almost as late as close to the French Revolution. Then the whole thing changed.
I mean, it was, in fairness though, I mean, it was a capital punishment offense.
Pardon?
It was an offense punishable by death. So
not at the time of Rabbi Akiva.
Yeah.
The Sanhedrin was over. Yeah. But in any case, he said it. Now, but I question what the answer. Why? He said, you're a dead dog. You issued the first 3 days, you issued a decree, it's not observed. Now, let's imagine somebody would go into that house and say, how come you made fire? It's possible that he said, I have a person sick, and I had to save his life and I had to make a fire. And that's Moshe Rabbeinu's law. That on Shabbos, for a person who is sick, if it's a danger of life, you can make fire. So, where did he catch that man? You know my question? Huh?
Where did he...
He says, you're a dead dog. Why? He says, you made a decree, and your decree is not observed, right? Huh? But it was a good excuse. And that excuse is legitimate even for the law of Moshe Rabbeinu. So where was wrong?
The difference is Moshe Rabbeinu made the law with that contingency built in, whereas the Roman government did not.
Again, what do you say?
Moshe Rabbeinu said, make fire, don't make fire on Shabbat unless these certain circumstances come up.
Yeah.
So the person who made fire, who was a Jew, was following the law of Moshe Rabbeinu even there.
Yeah.
In fact, if he did not want to make fire, he still would have had to make fire. Whereas the Roman person just said, don't make fire. And he did not allow for any other emergency circumstances.
Right, right. So, therefore, the criticism was not because it wasn't observed. Criticism was, why didn't they have seichel? Yeah, I don't know. People, practical people, will never buy a new model car. Mm-hmm. Give the engineers some time to find out the bugs. Mm-hmm. Take the bugs out, right? Mm-hmm. Because the human mind cannot foresee all exceptions. And this is why we have constantly to keep on adjusting our legislation. That's what he told him. He says it's normal for a human being not to notice that an exception. But Moshe Rabbeinu, while he gave the law, he gave already all exceptions. That was the answer. Is it clear what they say? Huh?
The part of the exceptions he gave is the ability to modify the law.
Pardon?
One of the things he gave was the ability to modify the law.
One of the things he gave?
In his law itself, he gave the ability to modify the law by making rabbinic laws.
No, you have to have the laws. Yeah, you have to have the laws. There is no modification. There is no modification, but you have to have. There is no modification, no. But this takes, it takes study to find them. Yeah, so, going back to lying. There are exceptions, and they are spelled out. But as a rule, lying is bad. Why?
Sorry, can you repeat the question?
Huh?
Can you repeat the question, Lisa?
Why is bad to lie? Why shouldn't I lie?
You're not.
Why do you expect to be honest?
You can't. It's very hard. If you're living in a society, let's say, there's a few reasons, but one of the reasons is if you're living in a society and everyone's going to lie, it's very hard for you to function in that society. It's hard for the whole society.
Are you telling me? We live in societies like this, we know. So you say lying is bad because it's harmless. Because it's harmful.
It's harmful. One reason, yeah.
Yeah. What another reason?
Well, from a religious point of view, you can say it's bad.
Why?
Because, well, you can say you're going to get punished for it.
Huh?
You can say it's harmful for your soul.
So, before you say it's bad because it's hurting society, now you say it's going to hurt you. And it's that harmful. Yes?
Maybe it's because there isn't a need to lie. Because if one accepts all the laws as they are, with their exceptions, then there shouldn't be any need to lie. And to lie is not to recognize what is there.
Yeah, I understand. So if it's not needed, but why is it bad?
You don't know the truth.
But let me tell you, the Torah looks at that. Just the reverse. You say it's bad because it's harmful. The Torah says it's harmful because it's bad. And why is it bad? Another explanation. One of the greatest gifts which a human being was given by nature is expression and communication. Right? Huh? If we wouldn't be able to communicate with each other, we just sit here and look at each other and we burn, no? Communication is a wonderful gift. Now I want to know for what purpose do I have it? Why was it given to me? Now, as any instrument, if I find an instrument and I want to know what was that instrument created for, I try to use it. And then I find out what it could be used for. Most probably that's the purpose. Yeah? I'll find something here and I'll try. If I'll find out that it cuts, I know it was made for cutting. I find out it's writing, it's made for writing. So let's find out what does communication achieve. Communication achieves convenience. Huh? And then communication achieves something else. Imagine if Newton would not be able to communicate. Everything which was created in Newton's mind would have been lost for the entire world, right? Huh? Mm-hmm. Therefore, one of the uses of communication is that what is going on in one brain can be shared with the outer world. Is that correct? Huh? Now I have already two uses. One is convenience, one is sharing information. Now if somebody lies, which one of the purposes is it in line, and which one of the purposes, and to one of the purposes opposite? If one lies, most probably, does he share with the outer world what's in his brain? He covers up. But he does it for convenience. Very convenient. Now, if convenience would be the purpose, lying would be right. But if sharing is the purpose, lying is wrong. Now, that's what's bad. What's the meaning of it? Tell me what the meaning is. The entire universe has only two areas, can divide it in two areas. Automation and manual handling. I can decide a piece of cake here, or an apple is here, I can decide whether I'll put it in my mouth or not, right? Once I put it in my mouth, the laboratory takes over. And I cannot give an order to my stomach to say, digest it faster, digest it slower. That's already automatic nature. So the human being itself has two areas. One area which is depending upon his decision, his free will, and one area which is automatic. Is that clear? The entire universe has not more than those two areas. Now, there is a relation, there's an interrelation between those two areas. Here's a knife. I can take that knife and cut my finger. Now my finger is the automatic area. Right? So I take with my free will and I cut it. So I can penetrate. After I cut my finger, it hurts. And if I want to use my hand, it's not so convenient to use my hand. So, which means my free exercise of my body has been limited. You see, there is an interrelation, a response, constantly a response. You can penetrate. Now the human being used his freedom to release nuclear energy. The response may be terrible summers right now in I know America is reporting they have terrible heat today. And it may be a result of the explosions. It's also a response. Huh? Is it clear what I say? Huh?
Yeah.
Now, my stomach doesn't need any rules and regulations how to. But my hand and my mouth needs rules and regulations. I have to know this is healthy food, this is unhealthy food. Now it so happens, as I illustrated before with the nuclear explosion, that my behavior cannot only destroy me, can destroy society too. So therefore, while the same thing as you take a camera, which you can override, an automatic camera, you can override it. So if we use it automatically, you don't need any manual of how to use it. But once you want to override and use it manually, you have to study the manual. How to use them, not to break the machine, isn't it? Therefore, since we have such a power of handling things, we need regulations. What is the nature of regulations? The nature of regulations is one word. Use an instrument for the purpose it was designed. That's all. That's the general rule of all behavior. The question is only, how do you know? What's the purpose? That's an illustration of that. Lying is a very good illustration. So therefore, the human being needs a manual. That we need it, no question about it. It so happens, what's the manual? So it ends up that there are two. One is the human conscience. And one is Torah. The human race is also divided in two areas. I like to illustrate it with a muscle. You know what's a muscle? What is a muscle?
Parable.
A parable, huh? I think it's illustration. Yeah. Imagine there has been a pilot strike. And no pilots. May happen here. In that country, they have traded in Shabbat for Shvitot. There's no Shabbos here. But for Shvitot. Shvitot is strikes. There are health strikes going on already for how many months? You don't know what's going on. But imagine there's a pilot strike. And the company has to fly planes. So somebody, an engineer, had an idea. He will write a flight manual, in fact, a flight schedule, hang it in the cockpit in front, and it would say what they should do at 4 o'clock, the pilot, what they should do 30 seconds after 4, another 15 seconds, and you push that button, you pull that lever. And he has a schedule for 4 hours, 5 hours. So if the man is alert and dependable and fast, and he can follow the schedule, he can fly the plane and land it. So since there are no pilots, so they started doing this. Then the strike is going on for some time. And it's no, it's a hazard. So they decided those people, they will train them as pilots. So the company issued flight manuals, engineering manuals, mechanical manuals. And between flights, they have to study. And one day they'll become. This is exactly Torah and Mitzvahs. We don't know. A person who lived 70 years, he wouldn't know to figure out the purpose of each and every instrument that there is. So follow the schedule. But don't be ignoramuses. Between flights, study. That's true. Fine, huh? But then, this is in the cockpit. What happens in the passenger cabin? In the passenger cabin, they don't have any schedules to follow. But there are certain regulations. When you take off, you don't smoke, right? You can smoke when you take off. Landing, you don't. The passenger is not expected to fly the plane, but at least he should behave in such a way that he shouldn't put the plane in fire. Right? Now, exactly the same is the illustration. The Jewish people and the human race. The human race sits in the passenger cabin. Nobody has asked them to be so. But at least don't murder, don't steal, don't put a plane on fire. Now for this, a human conscience would be enough, would be sufficient. For the fellows in the cockpit, you need manuals, you need schedules. Huh? Trouble is that the human conscience can be very easily spoiled. There are many things. The human conscious, the subconscious, is a computer, and it is already programmed. But you can reprogram it. There are many things which have to do with this. There is something which is, I would call, mass psychology. We are trying to think like other people thinking. We are trying to fit in to the thinking of people. You know that? Listen, I read a newspaper. I know that the journalists are liars. I know that instead of reporting news, they create news. I don't know whether you know as much as I know about it. I read a paper and I believe the news. I know that they are the worst liars in the world. Today it's a normal thing that you know what's going on now with that Jesus story?
The movie?
Yeah.
What's the latest?
Pardon?
What's the latest?
The story.
Well, there's a movie and... You probably more up to date on it.
No, but they are... Now, but what is true with Christianity is true. That all they are doing, it's a scandal what they are doing. It's the worst scandal in the world what they are doing. And Hollywood decided they'll make a movie of Jesus, but they imagine Jesus as they would imagine a hero. So it's full of dirt. It's terrible. It's a second crucifixion.
And the head of the of that.
And he's a Jew.
He's a Jew, of course. Mm-hmm. So everybody's going.
Yeah. Now this is it's going to be. It's a great danger for the Jews. A great danger. Mm-hmm. But how low it is. But what I wanted to pick out, they put in imagination, and they give you a character. And the people will take this as the character. Now they sell you a different Jesus. But the church did it anyway. Because all the church did give us an image of something. Yeah. Now, when I read the paper, the same thing, the great news. So why do I believe what I read? You know why I believe? Tell you why. I realize that I am not the only one to read that paper. Another 10,000 people are reading the paper. And I assume they most probably believe it. So 10,000 people will believe it. Will I be a fool and not believe it? So I believe it too. This is the power of mass psychology. We place ourselves where we think that everybody feels. Is it clear what I'm saying? So therefore, you are too young to remember, but I remember when they came out, that was the first time somebody came out and said, there is such a thing like ethics of convenience. Mm-hmm. That's convenient, that's ethical.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Huh? So therefore, each and every person has different ethics. Now they keep on so talking about it until our subconscious is being reprogrammed. And this is why the conscience, as a guide, is still not reliable, especially today. This is what's happening. And we have to go to some primitive countries in order to have some decency. That's your civilization. Now, there has to be a law. And there has to be a law not only in order that society could exist. It's just the opposite. There has to be a law that I should behave correctly. Even in society is the same thing. I should not be honest in order you should be honest. I should be honest because I have to be honest. And there is such a difference. Because the difference is between a society which is based upon obligations or a society which is based upon rights. Today we have a society which is based upon rights. So every person has the right to do whatever he wants. Has the right even to kill for fun. But the other fellow has the right to defend himself. Torah teaches us just the opposite. A society is a society of honesty. A society of givers, not a society of takers. Today we don't have even a society of takers. Today we have a society of grabbers. That would take me. But Tara teaches you just the opposite. It's late. I don't know. It's very late now. That the social order can only exist when people are concerned about their obligations to each other, when people care for each other. Those are givers. People care for themselves are takers. When was it? Monday night. Monday night, you know Kiryat Noah here? Boys Town? Boys Town in Bayit Vegan, you know about it? Huh? There was the yahrzeit of a very great man this week. Great teacher. And a group of people who knew him, the head of Boys Town is a son-in-law of his. So we got together with other people. So and I told him a story. Just an illustration. That man is teaching a class. And two boys are coming in, and no seats anymore. So they go, they fetch each one a chair, and they come in, bring a chair and sit down. And it was a schleppers. If each one of you would have brought a chair for the other fellow, you'd have done something. You would have been human beings. Each one brings a chair for himself. Animals can do the same thing. That's a lesson. I think we should stop here.